You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll meet the new host of WPR's morning show here on the Ideas Network and talk about her plans and hopes for the program. First, it's time for our weekly review of state news. Shirley Abrahamson has been a justice on the Wisconsin Supreme Court since 1976, was the first woman to serve in that capacity. She announced this week she will not seek another term. Also this week, Attorney General Brad Schimmel said that all of the backlogged Wisconsin rape kits are on their way for testing and will be analyzed by the end of the year. We'll find out what led to that move. And Wisconsin Democrats are holding their state convention this weekend. We'll get a preview of what's on the agenda and how candidates are hoping to stand out in the race for governor. J.R. Ross is the editor of WisPolitics.com and joins us to dig into these stories. J.R., good to have you back.
Anytime.
Well, let's start with the announcement this week that Justice Shirley Abrahamson will not be seeking re-election to the state's Supreme Court. Now, talk about her career on the court. It's been going a long time.
Oh, I mean, there are a lot of firsts with Shirley Abrahamson. I mean, the first woman to serve on the court, first woman chief justice, longest-serving justice, longest-serving chief justice. I mean, you cannot underestimate the impact she's had on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, the imprint she's left on the judicial system in Wisconsin. I mean, like, it goes on, and that's part of it's just the longevity. You know, she was appointed to the court in 1976. I was 3 years old when she got on the court, right? I mean, that's a remarkable tenure on the bench.
And she started, like, kind of a lot of justices have, by being, as you said, appointed by a governor, and then she ran for re-election and kept winning these 10-year terms.
Yeah, and let's not underestimate, when she was appointed, there were questions about, you know, could she win a statewide race? This, I think we're talking like the, you know, mid-70s she got appointed. It was unusual to have a female justice, and she had to go out there and earn it. And then she earned it over and over again. When she announced her decision not to seek re-election, she pointed out that she won each time with, I believe, 55% of the vote or more, and one time touched 65%. So, I mean, this is, you know, a fairly impressive record.
Can you talk about her role on the partisan breakup of the court, increasingly partisan breakdown in the court?
You know, and as I talked to somebody this week, he said, when you run the show and things aren't going well, you have to show us on the blame, right? So we saw the court become increasingly partisan now. There are a lot of factors for that, right? I mean, for one, you have personalities on the bench like you have in any job, so that's going to play a part of it. Two, look at the races, how they developed in the mid-2000s. I mean, when I first started covering Wisconsin politics, we had a couple of races in a row where the justices weren't even challenged, were up for re-election. They never took a pass on them because the thought was, it's so tough to beat an incumbent justice, why bother? Well, then we had an open seat in 2007 that Annette Ziegler won. We saw the first kind of real role of outside groups coming in. Justice Lewis Butler lost in 2008, the first incumbent to lose since the 1960s, I think it was. And we've seen the role of outside groups kind of flourish, and with it, see more partisanship. And then we also saw an incident between Justice Ann Walsh Bradley and David Prosser that got a lot of attention. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff like that that really have, you know, brought a little bit of, took some shine off the court there for a few years.
Yeah, talking about when there are reports about physical altercations allegedly on your state Supreme Court, that's not the kind of headline you want as a Chief Justice.
No, when you had, like, Justice Gableman, who the court split on disciplining him over a TV ad he ran in that 08 campaign against then-Justice Butler. Ziegler was hit with an ethics thing about hearing cases when she was in Washington County. But, I mean, just a series of things that kind of didn't really shine a very pretty light on the Supreme Court there for a while.
And before we move on from this announcement, take a look ahead at the election. Are people already lining up to run for this seat on the court?
We heard immediately after Justice Abrahamson announced she wasn't seeking re-election, Appeals Court Chief Judge Lisa Neubauer said she was going to look at it. We talked to Milwaukee County Judge David Borowski this week, who said he's going to take a look at it. Brian Hagedorn, who's an Appeals Court judge, had already been talking about running for the seat before Justice Abrahamson made her announcement. So people are going to kick the tires. It's an open seat. What's really important about this race, though, is that with Rebecca Dallet winning an open seat in April, once we get to her being sworn in later this summer, it'll be a 4-3 conservative majority. The conservatives, or the liberals, have to hold Abrahamson's seat next year to have a shot in 2020 to flip control of the Supreme Court, because then Justice Kelly is up, who's appointed by Governor Walker. So this is really a kind of a make-or-break moment where, for liberals, if you win that seat, you've got a shot. If you're conservatives, and you take the seat, then you have a cushion that's what happens in 2020, you still have control of the court. So it's going to be a big deal next year.
Talking to J.R. Ross from Wisp Politics about some of the top stories in Wisconsin news this week. Let's move on to this announcement, J.R., from Attorney General Brad Schimmel, looking at these untested rape kits. A 2015 review found that nearly 7,000 rape kits had not been tested in the state. There's been a process to try to catalog them and then get them tested. What's the new development here from the Attorney General?
Basically, that they have sent the last of those backlog kits off to labs to be tested. I mean, this is a very big issue for Brad Schimmel. I mean, this issue's been around for a while. It became an issue back in when Peg Lautenschlager was Attorney General back in the mid-2000s. J.B. Van Hollen, when he was Attorney General, focused on it a lot. Now we have it again. And, you know, for Schimmel, this is an important issue to kind of try and take off the table or to address because he's up for election this fall. But I can tell you that his opponents already have the ads pretty much written in their minds because to them, this is a signal of a failure of his leadership. But also they're in contrast the backlog with the money he spent on swag. I mean, there are stories a year or two ago about spending money on coins that have the phrase a kick-ass every day on them, you know, other swag that he got with a DOJ emblem on him. Now, there's a reason why he did that, and he can justify that. But for opponents, they're going to contrast this backlog with that money being spent. And I'm not saying that it's necessarily fair or right, but this is politics, right? You have an opportunity, if you're an opponent of Brad Schimmel, to say, this guy spent money on coins when he didn't take care of the backlog. And it's going to be something he has to deal with and address, show progress on ahead of this fall.
And not all of the pieces of physical evidence, I understand, will be tested. There are some categories, like ones where the victim didn't want to pursue this any further, things like that. So that whole 7,000 number, not every single one of those pieces of evidence ends up going to a lab, it sounds like.
Yes, and every time you have, you know, if there's anybody who they find because they tested it now versus testing when they first got the sample, that could be an issue for Schimmel as well, where it's a good thing to go capture, you know, find this person and close a case, but also could raise questions of, well, why didn't you do it sooner? So for him, good thing to do to try and get this stuff, you know, tested. How does he kind of message this issue going forward to try and address what could be a weakness for him?
Now moving on to an election issue. I know how you're spending your weekend, JR, at the Wisconsin Democratic Party convention. The Republicans had their convention a couple weeks back. Can you talk about, first of all, what happens at one of these things?
Well, basically, it's kind of like a motivational speech for the for the activists. And why I say that is, you know, both parties do these every year. The people who come are people who will man the phone banks, who will, you know, put yard signs up, who will go do doors, who get involved in campaigns. So this is an opportunity for them to hear directly from the people that they're going to work for as kind of like a quick, you know, go get them kind of thing, a motivational speech. There's that. It's also going to be a chance for this crowded gubernatorial field to make a direct pitch to the activists of, hey, I'm the strongest candidate because of, you know, A, B, or C. You know, for a lot of these candidates, I mean, like Tony Evers, state superintendent, he's on the ballot four times. He's won statewide three times. People kind of know who he is. But for some of these other candidates, they're not nearly as well known. They haven't been on the ballot the way that Evers has. This is a chance to kind of help get a little more name ID with these folks, you know, and then these folks who go to convention, they'll go home and tell their neighbors, you know, I saw so-and-so speak, and he or she really impressed me. I think you should give him a look. And when you're talking, there are nine camps we focused on for the most part in this race. There are 10 who have turning enough signatures with the party to qualify to speak at convention, it's kind of hard to get traction, a lot of attention. And we're also not seeing them up on paid media right now. So what we're watching for is who can raise enough money between now and maybe mid-July to do a sustained 3 to 4 week media buy ahead of this August 14th primary, because until then, the average voter is not seeing these guys. Even though they're doing events around the state, they're talking to people, doing shows, they're just not being, it's not a very high-profile thing. They need to get out there on TV and radio to kind of capture some attention and maybe get some momentum ahead of that primary.
And a straw poll will happen, and in one sense, it's completely meaningless. It doesn't win you the official party nod to get that nomination, and some candidates are saying, hey, we don't care about the straw poll. On the other hand, if maybe a lesser-known candidate can make a splash in this, it's one way to stand out from the crowd.
Yeah, I mean, the campaigns kind of approach these things in an interesting way that they don't want to seem like they're overtly trying hard to win, because in case they don't, but they still want to do well. And we historically do straw polls at the party convention, so if you come to our website tomorrow sometime in the afternoon, you'll see how it turned out. But for these campaigns, it's an early opportunity to show organization. That might seem kind of odd that, like, well, there might be 1,500 people this weekend. What's that mean? But you're trying to get your supporters to do something. You're trying to show that you can organize them, encourage them to go. You get some attention. I mean, it's just a chance to get a little boost out of convention, because now we're, you know, think about it. We're here the first day of June. This primary now is, what, a month and a half away, 2 months away, whatever it is. So we're getting to crunch time. It's an opportunity to kind of get a little boost and try and ride that into maybe some more donations, maybe some more attention, and then, like, get that paid media campaign ahead of the primary and really get your name out there.
JR, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, anytime.
That was J.R. Ross. He's the editor of WisPolitics.com. He joined us for our weekly look at some of the top news stories from around the state. And starting today, we will run WPR news profiles of Democratic hopefuls and of Governor Walker at 4:55 and 6:55 each evening. You can also find them at WPR.org.